Welcome to Venturi's Voice. I'm Andy Davis. Venturi's Voice brings together thought leaders from a variety of industries who are taking the most innovative approaches to leadership and staffing. Imagine having a mix of experienced mentors sharing their secrets on leadership, recruiting, onboarding, engagement, and motivating, as well as stories on life lessons they've learned along the way. And it's free. If you're the head of a major corporation leading a team of hundreds or about to take on your first leadership role, this podcast is for you. The show is about you, and we're here to help you become the best leader you can be. Stay up to date with the latest shows by subscribing on iTunes and SoundCloud, as well as signing up to the newsletter at venturi-group.com, where you can find the latest IT jobs, talent, and blogs on all things leadership, staffing, and development. I'd love to hear from you, so drop me a line anytime via email at andy.davis@venturi-group.com. Any feedback or requests are always welcome. Enjoy the show. Today's guest is Sean Nolan, Head of Networks at GigaClear. One of the kind of main things for me that I'm actually just genuinely interested in from my own personal perspective, I suppose, is my kind of concept of network was only really made to my consciousness when mobile came about. And that shows you how much of a layman I am in understanding the fundamentals of networks. But I know it's been around for a long time since then, but what did mobile bring to the networking world? How complex has it got since that kind of iPhone 1 sort of point? I mean, and how is it continually, you know, getting more complex? I mean, it must be, I can't even conceptualize now how crazy things are getting. But how has that kind of impacted, I suppose, your role since you first got involved in networking until now?
Yeah, I can't speak too much on the mobile side, but in essence, the mobile phone is just an end device, an end host device on the network. So that could be a laptop, a desktop, an Xbox, a VoIP phone, you name it. It could be anything. But you're right, they do all connect into the network. So your network is predominantly your backbone, your infrastructure, interconnecting all these devices, including web servers and things of that nature. But where and what I've seen over the last decade or so within networking is that there is a shift starting to happen. So when I first started networking, there was little or no attention towards virtualization, things like VMware or things of that sort. So what I have seen is a more of a push towards SDN and a heck of a lot of push towards automation in general. So where we've gone from employing many, many different engineers to look after these networks, we're looking to replace that physical, that human element with more machines, basically. So this is where we have to do things en masse, easily repeatable tasks that are simple. You don't really want to be adding to your headcount to do that. So this is where the automation comes in. And then the network intelligence on how to best make use of your network and best make use of that bandwidth. This is where software-defined networking is starting to come in. So many years ago, so a year ago in the network world or the technology world, it feels like 10 years in the normal world because things change so rapidly. But even just a few years ago, I was at an SDN conference and I was very skeptical. And there wasn't many hands being shown in the room about who was actually taking this technology on board. But I was just at a recent one, recent conference in London, and at least half the room at this point were putting their hands up saying they're either looking into it or they're starting to deploy it, which I found quite interesting. So things are changing.
How does that impact, I suppose, from the people perspective as far as kind of the recruitment cycle and the way that, you know, organizations are now looking to structure network teams? Is it changing quite substantially? And in with that, what kind of skills when they're looking at the onboarding process for networking people is that impacting on? And, Are you seeing, different types of talent now coming through in networks?
Oh, yeah, definitely. Yeah, it's a very good question. And you're spot on. And with the change in technology, you need a change in skill set. So, in the past, you could get away with being just a very good network engineer. Your customer and communication skills didn't need to be that good. Your knowledge of data center technology and VMware, NSX, depending on what company you worked in, of course, didn't need to be that great. You could just get away with being a syntax engineer, just inputs and outputs. However, the industry is changing so much. We've got so many engineers within that space who can just take an exam and know what syntax to put in, that the industry is saturated with those kinds of engineers. But what it doesn't have is the hybrid engineer who does know a thing or two about coding. They may know one or two languages, like Python or PHP or not even down to that level, but they just understand how the automation works, stuff like Ansible, Chef and Puppet, and they understand that, but they also have networking skills. Now, those kind of people, you look on any, everyone gets all these job postings all the time. A lot of the job postings are, we would like you to have experience in this, and this, a real shopping list of skills. And those engineers are actually quite hard to find. But even speaking to my team, I encourage them thoroughly to not just do pure binary networking, but look into stuff like technologies like NSX and get their Python coding skills up to date, because when it hits us, we want to be able to hit the ground running with these technologies. So you are right. The skill sets are changing, and it kind of reminds me of the old car manufacturing plants. So I don't know if you probably remember the old stories. It's probably before your my time, but when cars used to be assembled manually by hand on production lines, and in order to increase the volume, they had to increase the staff. More output, more staff, more human element. But then came along all the robotics and made a lot of people redundant. But then there were the people who were made redundant, and then there were the people who was actually upskilled themselves to support that new system. And that's the same for any technology. And that's what I think network engineers going forward really need to start to think about, is how they can make themselves more invaluable and not just a true pure network engineer, if that makes sense. Because there's too many of us who's just does networking.
Yeah, it really does, actually. And it's really interesting. I did a podcast just not long before we started here, and kind of we talked quite a lot about the kind of proving your value add, I suppose, from a technical team's perspective. We were talking about it from a little bit different of a level, but in this instance, it's so true, and it's also interesting that now it's becoming more and more of a need for technical people to prove out that kind of worth beyond just the ability to do things. It's become so much more than that, and the kind of demand for a different set of skills and understanding the business needs as much as understanding the technical capabilities seems to be just a massive theme has come in recent time.
Definitely, yeah. No longer can the network bods or any other domain within an engineering team that goes for servers, IT, DevOps, or architectural domains, no longer can they just sit in their silo and have limited interactions across the business, because everything ties into everything these days, so you're right, a network engineer has to have good communication skills. They have to know what the business wants, being able to translate that business vision into a technical strategy, and working in silo, which you could get away with quite easily. Maybe in large companies you can quite easily hide if that's what you like doing, but going forward, you know, there will be somebody who has all these skills, and you'll be up against them in an interview, and guess which one they're going to pick? It's not going to be you. So that's the hard and fast reality of not adding to your skill set, really.
Yeah, do you think that with this kind of next generation, they're more aware of that, perhaps?
I would say yes. Yeah, definitely. Yeah, I have a lot of postgrads and pre-grads that have worked for me and are currently working for me as well. And they are as much coders as they are network engineers. They're very 50-50, and that's really nice to have. So they have no real strong bias against one technology or another. It's pretty much, you know what, you put it in front of me, I'm just going to figure it out. You know, I was speaking to one of my engineers today, and I said, you know, how can we automate checks against, you know, IP blacklisting? And you know, the guy knew coding, and the guy has developed some scripts before, but because of his in-depth understanding of how the network works, he's come up with a little mini project on the back of that. And I thought, that's really quick turnaround. So we didn't need a separate network engineer and a separate coder or DevOps or whatever the term they want to use. However, all in one person for that. So you do get, in the nicest possible way, you get these kind of quite like senior engineers who may have been doing it for 15 plus years. And you may say, you know, we've got this problem, but they won't be able to think outside of networking to solve that problem. So their skill set and everything must be solved with the networking toolkit. So there's no kind of out of the box thinking. It's very ingrained that their solutions must come from what they know, because they've not kept themselves up to date with their skill set.
Yeah, it's really interesting that the import and the influx of, I suppose, non-traditional technical people is really impacting and having, great strides in innovation throughout all different sort of technical disciplines. It's a great story. You know, we said this. I was talking about this not too long ago, and it's a great story and a great example for, you know, other industries. And you know, tech. I mean, there's no question now. Tech is absolutely dominating the industry wars. And you know, you look at, you know, the recent innovations, and now we see it from a recruitment perspective, the demand for, you know, totally different skills than some of the guys who were, you know, working these technologies, you know, 10 years ago. And the type of individuals that are now, in kind of demand, and the backgrounds are just so diverse. And all that does is create different perspectives. And that has to be a massively positive thing. And it proves it, you know. I mean, look at the rapid rate of change now. And that only comes from people thinking outside the box. And I suppose sometimes to be able to think outside the box, you have to be from outside the box, you know. And I think that's what we're seeing in networks and in data and across the whole spectrum. So it's really interesting. And I suppose it kind of makes me wonder about from a leadership, from kind of a management perspective, how that kind of adds to the complexities of, you know, managing a team and keeping them aligned, while at the same time, you know, encouraging them to continuously have those outside the box thoughts and, you know, that might help in efficiencies.
Yeah, it is, you know. I've always said this. I've always said this to my team and my colleagues, the other head of departments that I work with. You know, your team, okay, they come to you with questions, and you've got to have those answers. You're not always going to have the answers, but you need to know where to find them. So as a leader, yourself, it's not just about management. You're going to have to understand, not necessarily understand how to code in Python, but know where it sits within the business and when to use it and its actual value add. So the leadership aspect, it is difficult. Um, I Myself, I do keep up to date on all the latest technologies. I study 2 hours a day just to try to keep up with the ever-evolving technology landscape and the things that we're going to be using. But as technology leaders, whoever in whatever department, you need to be on the cutting edge. You don't want to be in a meeting with your team and you don't know what's going on because that's bad. You shouldn't be a leader. You need to move away. You need to give someone else that job, someone who's able to lead that team. So it's as technology evolves, you have to evolve with that technology and your leadership style as well. So one of the things which I do on my team is I obviously know what the business needs to accomplish, its business vision, and I have a very clear and defined network strategy. However, I'm not the subject matter expert in all the different technologies that are being used. So when I get the guys and girls in the room, I set the agenda, I set the roadmap. Okay, here's where we're going. Discuss, and then they come up with all the different good ideas on what we should be doing, and if it deviates too much from what we're looking at doing, then I just bring it back on track. But I don't ever get involved to the point where I say, if a recommendation from a subject matter expert is saying, okay, we need to do that, then that's the recommendation. That's what we're going to do if it aligns to what we're doing. But yeah, so as technology leaders in whatever field that we sit in, we definitely need to be on top of our game at all points and never rest on our laurels, never. So I've seen that quite, I've seen that and experienced it quite a lot in the past of having maybe like an old network engineer, maybe doing it for 20 years, and you realize they're probably not the go-to person for your questions anymore. It's not a great place to be in. It's as I said before, it's the same across every industry. You need to be on the ball, definitely.
I think it's more paramount in technology, perhaps, but I think you're right, and I think it's always been true. I think that it's just been accelerated now, and I think that's why more and more people are kind of probably conscious of it now. And it's always takes extreme cases for people to become conscious of things, but the rate of technology, you can be an expert in, as you say, you can be an expert in one particular technology, and then in 2 years' time, it's completely redundant. Back to the point about people kind of proving their kind of worth. I mean, it's a horrible statement to make. I really hate making that statement, but it's so kind of true at the same time. A big part of that now internally is kind of just open communication and transparency. Something that I suppose technical people haven't traditionally been brilliant at, but you're certainly having to learn and learn quickly. When it comes to things like looking at new technologies that you might want to invest in, or you might want to make a case to invest in, if you haven't been kind of transparent on the other kind of successes that you've had, it can be very hard to motivate the kind of key execs to look at that and invest in it if you haven't had that consistency in of transparency and kind of proving out the value, I suppose. So it's just an example of how kind of important it is now to be able to have that line of communication.
Oh yeah, definitely. So on an individual level, between the teams, everybody at all times should always be providing a value add to the team. That's what you get paid for, right? That is reality. Whether it sounds harsh, you like it or not, that is the business world, and we all work in businesses. You need key outputs. There's always somebody, nipping at your heels who wants to do what you do, and that's fair enough, and that's great. It keeps you on your toes. So where I've had conversations in the past with people saying, "Oh yeah, but I've been here for 10 years," but who really cares? No one actually cares. You have to at all times be the best that you're going to be in order to. In order to deliver for the company. So that is why we have employment. So there shouldn't scare or worry anybody, that statement. And furthermore, going not just from an individual basis, from what you're saying, for the technology arena and demonstrating that to the wider business, that almost becomes an easy task if you're aligned with the business. So if you're, so if the technology domain, whether that's servers, DevOps, networking, is aligned with the business strategy, then that shouldn't be a problem at all. So what you're doing and what you're bringing with your business cases and, you know, all your, you know, your project briefs and, you know, you're doing your presentations to the, you know, the senior exec team should come as no surprise whatsoever. So as technology leaders, you know, we have to be thoroughly transparent. And your question about should we be more transparent, I believe in any business, you know, of any scale, full transparency is needed. And I hate to use too many business buzzwords, but you do need full alignment across all tiers of the business. Otherwise, you're just working in a silo. And that's my job from the network side, is to present what my SMEs present to me, and I give it to the wider business, and then present that to the senior leadership team. You know, whatever new technology is, whatever, if it's NSX, SDN, IPv6 technologies, it needs to have a clear, you know, a clear demonstration of the value that's going to bring to the business. Because as fun as technology is, you know, sometimes you've got to, you know, rein it in, because as engineers, and I've obviously been an engineer many years, we all like the new shiniest, greatest technology, and a lot of us like to deliver the Rolls-Royce solution, which is not always the best solution for the business. So it's my job to kind of filter that out and making sure we're not delivering the latest, shiniest, bleeding edge technology, but proven technologies that are actually going to bring in revenue for the business.
Yeah, no, it's a good balancing act. And I think a lot of people are so tempted, you know, by it. You know, when I speak with different, you know, like say consultancies and such, that, you know, see a lot of different clients, that's, it's actually a point that's brought up all the time, is they're motivated by this latest and greatest thing that they've heard, and like, we need this. And it's like, you almost have to kind of be like, actually, let's just think about this for a second.
Yeah.
So it's an interesting point, and probably something that I can't imagine has been as kind of obvious as it is now. I suppose in 10 years ago, I can't imagine that necessarily being a problem. It's like almost waiting for the latest stuff to come out. But now I think, you know, open source and all these kind of, you know, the rate of change, it's become so far the other way that it's almost like a problem now, isn't it?
Yeah, I've sometimes described it as when people say we pride ourselves in being pioneers. I always take the contrarian view of, do you remember what happened to the pioneers in America? You know. Do you remember something called the Oregon Trail? You know, they all got attacked by Indians and got dysentery, and their wildebeests all sunk. So that's what happens to pioneers. It's a very risky, risky place to be in. But if you're happy to accept that risk, if you're happy to take that bleeding edge technology and it's not critical path for the functioning of your business, if you're happy to absorb that, if that technology fails, you know, you can, your business can take that hit, then go for it. So it's all about risk mitigation in that kind of sense, on what technologies you take. You know, do you take SDN until it's fully matured? Do you take SDN before, you know, I don't know, maybe the AT&Ts and the BTs of the world have fully adopted it and proven out that technology? You know, and they've absorbed the risk, and you know, all the further standards have been written on the back of their experiences. So it's something which should always be taken into consideration when choosing a new technology.
Yeah, I agree. And I'm sure you have to kind of align your team as well. I'm sure you get a lot of kind of creative thoughts and suggestions, and you know, I think that's an amazing thing to do. But I think now what you need from a technical leader is they almost need to be kind of a business leader, don't yeah. they? And someone who like really is fundamentally understanding the business needs almost first, right? And I think that's it is a lot of the time a difficult transition for technical people to leap, right?
Oh yeah, you wouldn't. Yeah, I could go into immense detail about some of the discussions I've had You know, I've had some of my SMEs giving me the, you know, the Rolls Royce gold clad solution. You know, it's got HA, high availability, that would last a nuclear blast. And I turn around and say, really, you think we're going to get funding for this? And, you know, then try to push it down to the business terms, you know, and say, you know, we need to be realistic. What is the minimum viable product, the MVP here? And as technologists, especially for SMEs, to be fair, they don't care about the money. That's not what they see day in, day out. But the job is of the technology leaders is to relay and be that stopgap between the business and their technology sector, and give the direction and the leadership about what's actually good for the business, and not necessarily what's good for what's good because it's fun or to configure or it's bomb proof. So it's quite an interesting discussions. And on one hand, you can't and you shouldn't snub or stifle anybody's creativity, but on the other hand, it's still not a free for all. You haven't got a blank check to deliver everything that every you know that everybody has a whim about. So it is getting that back again alignment to what the business wants, without stifling the creativity. So it is definitely a balancing act.
Yeah, I agree, mate. I agree. I wish we had longer, but maybe we can catch up again soon and maybe do another 30 minutes, because I think we've got plenty more to discuss. But I'll thank you anyway for the obviously for the time that we've had today. I really appreciate you kind of doing this.
Thanks for listening to Venturi's Voice. Please make sure you subscribe at iTunes or SoundCloud, or check out the website venturi-group.com. And keep up to date with the latest IT jobs, talent, news, and podcasts. Or drop me a line. It's andy.davis@venturi-group.com. Any feedback, topics, or guest suggestions are always welcome. And thanks again for listening to the show. See you next time.